It's Tuesday. It's 10 a.m.
Indeed.
So what else could it be but Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater.
Here we are.
Bringing Caroline coast to coast and the speakeasy to your doorstep. Your host, Claudio, Renaissance man and bard of WCOM, has opened the doors of the speakeasy once again. Thank you, Claudio, for
my pleasure
being here. Thank you, our sound effects man in the back. I thank him very much. And anyway, you're invited to come as you are, in all your glory and all your diversity.
In your pajamas, naked as you please. Yeah,
exactly. Find a seat, get comfortable in the place where you're always welcome and can always expect the very best.
Yes, we support
Good morning,
nudists.
Claudio.
Good morning. One of my absolute favorite people here is here in the studio today, and that'd be Alex Weiss.
Good morning. It's good to be here
Great
with you.
To have you back,
folks.
He's just back from the Himalayas, so we're gonna find out what that journey was all about very shortly.
Mm-hmm, that trek.
It sounds. I mean, he brought back this a calendar that you've made available on the market of the journey, and beautiful photographs.
Thank you, Claudia.
And brought me a stone. I asked him for a souvenir, and he brought me a stone that he found on his walk. So.
A piece of the mountain, a piece
Indeed.
Of the Himalayas.
Something indigenous. That's what I call an indigenous souvenir. Mm-hmm. He's done that a few times, actually.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I love
You've got
these.
Something from somewhere in Mexico.
From Belize, I think.
Belize, yes, yeah. yes. Yeah.
Well, this stone came from the Bodhi Gandaki River.
Gorgeous. So it was actually underwater?
It was by the water.
By the water, gotcha.
I mean, it was one of about 5 billion stones over there.
No doubt.
But
it's a beauty.
This one was a very special one.
This one was smoothed out, too.
Yeah, and it's got some nice striations.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I didn't just grab it. I looked to several. Actually, one
Selective.
Went to my wife.
After I looked at the pictures in his calendar album, I would say, I saw some other rocks and I said, why didn't you bring me that one?
Yeah, some of them were like 5 tons and stuff.
Yes, right.
This was a big rock.
Fortunately, he could keep this one in his pocket for the entire hike that he did. So, mm-hmm.
Well, I like the
honor.
Handshake you did with Alex, too, except when you put the rock between your hands and shook
Yeah, it. That's always been a tradition with me whenever somebody brings me a stone from a journey to put it in both palms and shake on it and
that
keeps the
nice.
Spirit of the stone.
Very nice.
That's just my thing.
Yeah, it's a good thing.
But I want to. So we're going to go on with Alex, and we're actually going to play some music selections that he's brought, and then he's gonna cue us into his marvelous journey. I envy him that journey. It was absolutely beautiful just to look at the photographs. Meantime, I just want to quickly announce the historic Carolina Theatre of Durham that has all kinds of events coming up. Just go to carolinatheatre.org and you'll see they are the underwriter of Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theatre. And I have been informed that I'm hired to both host and stage manage George Carlin coming up. George Carlin. He's gone. Sorry, George Winston. I've got Carlin on the mind this morning because I saw the Mark Twain
PBS
tribute
thing,
they did on
yeah.
PBS. Yeah, gorgeous. But anyway, so George Winston, to me, who is a modern-day Mozart, mm-hmm. This will be my second time having the privilege of hosting him and then stage managing the next day, which will be on the 15th of December. He'll be at the Historic Carolina Theatre. So just want to put in that word for the wonderful underwriter. Also want to mention that coming up in the not-too-distant future, I'm going to have a friend of mine back on. His name is Gerald LeBaron. He's out of California way, Tujunga, California. And he has just produced a documentary, sort of a light documentary, and I'm going to read you a note I got in the mail today along with a DVD that's not on the market yet. Dear Claudio, he thinks I'm a dear person. Hey.
Is it D-E-E-R?
Watch it. I am very pleased to present you with a copy of the lighthearted political documentary Fools on the Hill with Ed Begley Jr., Dean Cain, and Gerald LeBaron. This is fresh off the press, so no package available yet, no chapters or menu either, but I thought you'd like to get a copy of it right away. You can look up the trailer at foolsonthehillmovie.com. That's foolsonthehillmovie.com. I think you'll like it. Here's a short synopsis. Nearly 2 years in the making, filmmaker Jed Rigney follows Gerald LeBaron as he examines the root problems in U.S. politics that have played major roles in the economic meltdown, declining education, I think they want to keep us all as stupid as they are, crony capitalism, and a resulting Occupy Wall Street movement, of which we are now linked to, thanks to Robert Ruskind. So the speakeasy is linked to the Occupy Wall Street movement. In this modern-day David versus Goliath, Gerald LeBaron sets out on a journey to make our politicians do the jobs they were hired to do. Fancy that. Can one man really make a difference? Probably not. It's a rather quick negative summation. One woman, I do believe,
always makes a difference.
I do believe they can, too.
For the
too,
good
yes.
or for the nil.
One voice, yes. But Gerald's inexperience may be his best weapon. So, distribution of this film has not yet been determined. However, it will be available on the website by December 13th. And the anyone wanting to inquire, the email is info@honorinoffice.org. And again, the movie, let me find that again.
It says a humorous look at it. That's what the hard part. That's yeah, you have to be creative about.
I think a lighthearted look at something rather serious. I'm sure he's not going to miss any talking points. Don't worry about that. And otherwise, it's foolsonthehillmovie.com. You can look it up there. And that's my note for that. To continue on, Robert Roskind, whom we've just had on a short while ago, a leader of Bob Marley's One Love movement and also a leader in the Move on Wall Street, Occupy Wall Street movement, has linked the Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater to that website and will be on the show again in the new year. Historian Bob Crowley will be at the Speakeasy, will be our guest next week to join us in discussing the grave matter of graveyards.
What's interesting here?
I figured something a little different for the holiday season. It's not on Christmas, so I think we can get away with it. And, of course, then George Winston, again, at the Carolina Theater coming up. The only thing I can say about George Winston is, to me, he's truly a modern-day Mozart. And he's got a new album coming out, too. So, and that's the word. And
well, we've got another word. We've got a word about WCOM.
Exactly. So we're actually in our this is our fundraising month, right, December every year. So I want to give a quick, short education and a reach for some support. WCOM, your voice in the community, needs your help. Helps me. Your community radio station moved, and now we have rent and full utility costs to pay for the first time. That's right, we moved from Weaver Street support over there. We
so
don't
you,
have.
So you weren't kidding when you told me to pay $15 for the bathroom.
That's right.
No.
I told Alex there was a little charge box out there.
And it's more for number two. We don't have any paid employees, so everyone here at WCOM is a volunteer, and every cent donated goes directly to maintain the station. Yeah, so there's nobody making a profit here at all. It's just to support shows that you like to hear out there. Freedom of expression, for one thing.
And the love of good radio.
Absolutely. And not corporate speak. Mm-hmm. This is the one place you can get non-corporate. Besides rent and utility bills, we do have financial costs for internet streaming, insurance, equipment upkeep, telephone, music license fees, and fees for fantastic programs such as Free Speech Radio and Democracy. Now, among other things, we also do not do tote bags. We just tote our butts in here and do a show. Coffee mugs or fancy trips. What you get in return for your contribution is continued access to some of the best local radio, where your friends and neighbors are here to keep you company any time of day or night. WCOM is a non-profit organization, so all donations are tax deductible. Log on right now to WCOMFM.org. Click the Donate Now button and make a secure donation. $10 a month on your credit card makes you a member of WCOM, and you'll score a members-only bumper sticker and recognition on the WCOM website. Or write a check for whatever you can afford and send it to WCOM 208 East Main Street, Carborough, NC 27510. Thanks for your support and for your voice in the community.
That's what keeps us on the air.
Absolutely. And
I know one of the things is we're looking for donors, of course, and we're always looking for volunteers. If you've got some interest, particularly for volunteers behind the scenes who want to do things like fundraising,
yes,
let us know.
I think you put a lot of this message together that I just read, right?
Well, you know, yeah, I worked on it with some other people in the past, and one of our other volunteers has kind of spiced it up for right now. So, it's if we can get 100 people out of our how many thousands?
That is our quest right now. Yes,
like that, who will donate $10 a month? It is the greenest way to give because there's you do it all over the internet or just go to our website, and it's the recurring stability for the station that enables us to know that we don't have to scramble from month to month.
And as radio show
some
hosts,
kind of security.
We also do our best to bring in underwriters and sponsors of our show, and that is one key maintaining aspect. But
and you become a member then, and membership means you can serve on any of our working committees. You can, in other mm-hmm. words, if you become a member, you can come in and work some more.
Yes.
You get an invitation to the annual meeting and an opportunity to nominate and vote on the election of a board member. You'll get a quarterly report from the board of directors and a listing on the WCOM website.
And also, if you'd like to give in the name of any particular program mm-hmm. that you enjoy, please state that.
Right. When you fill out that form, particularly for the recurring donations, you'll see something down there that says on behalf of, and you can name your favorite show and let Absolutely. Us know what you like.
Why is the speakeasy still on the air? Here's $10. Take it away.
Well, you know. We're trying not only to provide a service by giving the means for our members of our community to come on the air and learn how to use the media
Absolutely.
And present a show, but we're also wanting to provide a service to the community in reflecting the interests of people of our listeners.
Absolutely,
out there.
Yeah. That's
Let us
here.
Know what you want to hear, and one of the best ways to do it is vote with a dollar.
Indeed, that seems to be what makes the world go round.
Anyway. That's our plug. We will make a second announcement before we go off the air.
So. She can make that one. So I've done my job.
Well, I'm honored to be on this show. I think
Thanks.
It's great what you do.
I appreciate
and
that.
And I don't need another tote bag or coffee cup.
Good. So boy, me neither.
No more tchotchkes.
So let's journey into Alex Weiss country. Alex is also the leader of Different Drum, which how would you describe that?
It's an Afro-Latin ensemble bridging the styles of Caribbean and Latin music.
It's absolutely gorgeous.
African roots.
I met him on stage when I stage managed Tinny Sutton at the Carolina Theater in Durham, and we've been friends ever since. That was years ago already. Yep. Jeepers, where does time go?
It was a while ago now. Yeah. We have reunions here.
And he had Tierney Sutton entirely insecure because she went up to him before he did the opening act and said, "Don't you dare be better than me."
She said all the band members unanimously wanted your band to open the show. Mm-hmm. And that made me suspicious, kind of like.
And a star is born. So, hey, give us the scoop. I know you brought some music there, and we're sort of going to do a musical beginnings here, but I very much want to hear about your journey through the Himalayas.
I know you do.
Yes. I'm like a kid
that
wants to find out.
I wish I could, and I like to share it, because to me, being able to travel to these parts of the world and just knowing that these beautiful cultures that exist, it makes the world so much richer, and that it still exists, and in some ways isn't as tainted as, some of the aspects of our society is getting.
Yes.
With commercialism and development.
It's actually, yeah.
It's happening, but it's happening in a different rate there mm-hmm. and in different ways.
And it also seems to be, I've noticed in just looking at some of the architecture, it also seems to be happening much more in the spirit of the nature that it's a part of instead of jutting out as something obscene.
Hopefully it will continue. Yeah, I mean, it happens in different ways at different places.
Yeah.
But even in our trek, where we were hiking on a trail in the Himalayas where you can't even get to it by cars, only trail. Mm. Donkeys and people mm-hmm. and yaks up on higher it. Elevations. Our trek leader, who does it every year, was saying, oh, there's a tea house that never was there. They're building here. They're building this campground expanded twice. Even there, even in the most remote areas, it's happening. Development, mm-hmm. development, development. Mm-hmm. I see them cutting down big trees with these. They don't have power saws. They have huge, like,
1800s,
those saws that, mm-hmm. two-man saws.
Two-man saws,
yeah.
right.
Why does cutting down trees always have to be a part of everything?
Well, wood
well,
is...
Well, we do have to make space for people too here and there.
So it's but it's on a different level. And
yes.
the still the wonderful spirit of the people that I believe comes from living simply.
Yes.
Is still there.
So I think we're...
The friendliness, the good-naturedness.
You live simply so that others may simply
yeah.
live.
And I think we're headed in that direction by looking at the, this nuisance of an economy that we have. We are presently being humbled.
So before I really go into the Himalayan aspect, I want to focus on. There is this time of year I make available a CD that started in simplicity. I wanted to record music that I don't get a chance to focus on very often. It's mostly recorder music, and a lot of it's early music from. As a matter of fact, the title of the CD is early music. But that's two reasons. One is the music is mostly 14, 1500s, 1600s. The other thing is I recorded it usually between 4 and 8 in the morning because that's what I did before I went to work.
Right, right.
You know, so this is you playing?
I played all the parts. I engineered it all.
Wonderful,
That time I had a 4-track cassette player, high-quality cassette, the highest quality back in, this is in around 1991.
Mm-hmm. Even the Beatles didn't have that.
This is around 1991. I recorded this. It was about 4 months of or 3 months of recording. And then originally it was a cassette that I made around Christmas time for people. And everyone liked it. And I would give it as presents. And then some of my musicians' friends said, you know, I was going to like just once they all sold, that's it. Or sold or gave, I gave them away. And my friends said, no, you should keep doing this. You should keep doing this. This is like really valuable. And so nowadays, Manic Technology, I was able to put it into a good CD, and I used the same design, early music design. So this is what I call it alternative Christmas music, because it's music that a lot of Christmas songs come from, like Greensleeves would be a good example.
Oh, interesting.
Early Renaissance styles.
Right.
And then they just make Christmas words over them. Well, these are a lot. Some of these are Renaissance melodies. Some of them are Baroque. There's a few Bach chorales. There's a Telemann canonic or two in there. There's European folk songs, and then there's a few original compositions.
So, what are we about to listen to?
So, I'd like to play "À la Venue de Noël," which actually means "The Way of Christmas" in French, I believe.
Yeah.
And these are mostly recorded duets that I added other parts to, and then light percussion in the background. This will give you an idea of it.
And this is Alex Weiss.
Venue de Noël.
Very beautiful. Nice. I could just see the stone walls of some ancient castle keep or something, and jesters coming out or whatever.
Yes, and him dancing with the flute in front of it.
Mm-hmm. I tried to capture that early feeling. Even the Baroque piece, the whole project I used simplicity is there's no chord instruments. It's all just the harmonies on the recorders and the trumpets, the cornets actually. There's some chorales. And then light, just very light. You could barely hear that triangle in the background. You know, just light percussion,
nothing
heavy. And because also I wanted to utilize what I had, which is only a four track, and I didn't want to overload and make something. I just wanted a sparse sound. It's more for background music. Like, to me, it creates a good holiday atmosphere where you can have that in the background. It's not like, you know, you have to just focus on it, or it's too heavy to have a conversation mm-hmm. over.
No, I agree.
It puts that aura in the room.
And a very simple feel, too, which I liked about
it. But just like the Himalayan trek, I trained to do that. I actually had to teach myself how to read for alto because I knew recorders, but I hadn't done, until I took out some of this music, I hadn't read for alto. And some of those parts, to get the, it took a while. It was 3 months of working on it, focusing on my recorder playing.
Wow.
and that aspect of it, because most of what I do is Latin and African and other mm-hmm. styles. Mm-hmm. So this, when I wanted to focus just on this, I had to work on it mm-hmm. to get it where I need, you know, as best as I can get it.
Well, you did a good job.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would say so.
So I would like to do one more song from this project that I did. And this will segue into the Himalayan trek, because
wonderful. Okay.
Even when in the 70s, I was inclined towards the East. I wanted to go to India. I was intrigued by the philosophy and the culture. And in those days, I did not consider myself a composer. I was thick-headed. These songs kept coming through, and the melodies kept coming, and I would kind of play them, but I said no. I'm just a, you know, I play trumpet and harmonica, but I refuse to see myself as a composer until they kept coming and coming and coming, and eventually
insisted that you were a composer.
Well, this was
a composer.
This was the straw that broke the camel's back, and this song kept coming back to me, and not only did the melodies come, but counter melodies and harmonies. And
wonderful.
You can hear these counter melodies in the song. And when this song, it was like a year or two process that this song, I kept kind of like, you know, this isn't, what is this bothering me for? And I had to start writing it out, all the different parts and how they fit together. And when it was done, it was like 1978 or so. And I looked at it and I said, oh, what am I going to do with this? This is like a composition.
Well, I'm glad you didn't have an exorcism.
this is the one that actually made me start seeing myself more as a composer and not just a trumpet player, harmonica player.
Well, I'd say you're full circle in that whole scenario. So which one are we playing at this
point? So this is called Sweet Divas Revisited.
And what cut is that?
And should I read what Divas is about?
Yes,
first?
Yes.
Please. Do you know what cut that is?
This is the last cut. Yeah, see, we went.
You're ahead of me. Never mind.
We're
I was
up on it. We're yes. up on it.
Divas is, I'll read it right from what Google says. Divas, or gods of India, are a mysterious race of superhumanly powerful humanoid beings who were worshipped by the ancient Vedic and Aryan tribes of the Middle East from about 3000 BC to modern times, where they are mainly recognized in modern Hinduism, one of the largest and oldest surviving religions on earth today. The human worshippers of the Devas in modern India call these gods by different names than those than they are now. For example, the ancient Aryan tribes of India called the king of gods Varuna, who was later replaced by the god Vishnu in Hindu traditions. Varuna is now known as Ormazd to members of the religion of Zoroastrianism, where the Altaic tribes of North India know him as Ulgin. Today, the Hindu gods and the Persian gods are two groups of a splintered pantheon with common origins known collectively as Devas. So right. It's a general mm-hmm. to the ancient gods. And this theme kept reoccurring to me. And to me, it had an ancient Eastern feel. Mm-hmm. So I called it Sweet Devas Revisited. Sweet because the several
S-U-I-T-E.
Movements. S-U-I-T-E. Mm-hmm. So that's the name.
So it's not an opera singer with an attitude.
No.
Gotcha.
Okay.
No tote bag for you.
Yeah.
Right. Here we go.
Thank you.
The one and only Alex Weiss.
So can you see hear the Eastern feel in that?
Absolutely. That's like taking a voyage sitting here and listening.
It's very hypnotic.
Yeah, it is. It's fantastic.
So that's the early music CD that I also call the alternative Christmas music. If anyone's interested in having a copy, you can go to my website, www.differentdrum.us, or give me a call, 919-491-5089.
And the name of this particular album is called Early Music with Recorders, Cornet, and Percussion by Alex Weiss.
Thank you, Claudio.
My pleasure. That was beautiful.
With that ending note, I thought it would be a good segue into the Nepali trip. And maybe we'll start with a Nepali piece. What do you do, if you can get it out, number four?
This has made it tougher. Now, hold on, let me help you. There we go.
Teamwork.
Yes
indeed. And this is from a... This is not your own recording, right?
No, this is not my own. We bought this several CDs in Kathmandu. But some of this music, our trekkers would sing and dance and drum at the end. Not always dance, but they would sing. And occasionally we'd party and dance. But they would sing and they would play a drum called a madal. It's a two-sided drum. They also use in
how do you,
India.
How do you spell that, madal?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
And it, you know,
I put him on the spot. There we
it
go.
It could be, you know, in English, the spellings vary.
Yeah.
I mean, and probably traditionally written in Nepalese, it's totally different.
Yeah, than, yeah, right. Yeah.
You know, so it could be M-O-D-U-L or M-O-D-E-L.
Yeah, interesting.
So is this track number four?
Number four is one of the songs they used to sing.
Okay.
And that is the one you prefer for us to play now?
First one, yeah.
Yeah. Here we go. Thank you. Okay, Alex, I'm going to put you on the spot. Now it's time for us to talk about that trek through the Himalayas. That was beautiful music, by the way. Yeah. Give us a little more history on that.
Well, the trek really started here. We trained for 6 months, hiking all around at various places in North Carolina.
I remember talking to you about that.
And also in New Mexico to get the elevation, because we in New Mexico it was 12,000, 10,000. We hiked in that area.
Right.
And that trek that we took went up to 16,700 feet.
Woohoo.
But it didn't start there. It started in the tropical zone.
Interesting.
So we actually hiked from somewhere west of Kathmandu, and then we hiked north, and we hiked up in elevation from tropics, from palm trees and, you know, really green and lush, gradually higher and higher and higher.
Could you notice the air getting thinner as you went up?
You didn't notice it so much until, you know, you noticed it getting cooler. I mean, it was hot.
No doubt.
We were in T-shirts sweating in the beginning, including the bus ride from Kathmandu, crammed into a little funky bus over like mostly...
Feeling every bump in the road, I'm sure.
I don't think they had too many roads that were paved. It was just...
Right.
And you know what amazed me is they had flowers growing everywhere. They grow rice and millet, and rice was everywhere. I couldn't imagine how they planted all this as we hiked. And this trek was 110 miles. But 110 miles, not straight. It's up, down,
yes,
up,
yes, yes.
Down, up, down, up, down, up. It's not even just up and then down. It's like the hill. It's just you go up and then you get to a high point and then you go back down and then you cross the river and then you go again, hike and up and down, up and down. And then you go up and then you go down and then you cross the river again or a different river because it's the whole country is rivers all through it. And
then you lose some people to big fish.
No, we didn't. Fortunately, we didn't lose. We had a few that almost puked at the high altitude.
Oh, no.
The height was an intense part, since it was also an incredibly long day. It was 12 hours for most of those hikers. I hiked faster with some of the Sherpas than I got back to camp earlier. But we started at 3 in the morning. We woke up at 2. And most of us, I mean, when I knew I had to wake up at 2, I basically didn't sleep anyway because I kept thinking
you were too ready for fun
in our tent. And at that point, that was 14,000 feet, and it was all snow and ice up there. And we hiked from 3 in the morning. We got to the pass, which was the height over Manaslu Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
We got there around 9:30 in the morning.
P.M. Oh, in the morning. Gotcha. Okay.
Because then we still had to hike down.
Because you had
a
different camp every night.
Right,
yeah.
So it was a 12-hour hike for most of those people. But going up, that was the hardest day for sure because of the elevation. Once you got above 14,000, the air is thin. I mean, tying your shoelaces will get you out of breath.
I can remember. I remember hearing from somebody that's done these things that it's all in the matter of how you pace yourself so that you can do a relaxed breathing as you go higher.
Yeah, that and trying to acclimatize. And this trek was thought out well by the Sierra Club trek leader. Her name is Melinda Goodwater. And there were days, there was a day or 2 days before that where we just spent a whole day just in a camp. Resting and getting used to the elevation. I think that was around 12,500. Mm-hmm. You know, because we started gradual, I mean, you get used to it. Both you get in shape because you're hiking every day, almost every day,
and
for
what
3 weeks.
What did you do for fun on the days that you just hung out to sort of acclimate?
Well, what I did for fun on that day was I hiked another 2,000-3,000 feet. There was a handful of us that really wanted to hike, and two of the Sherpas took us out on the Manaslu Mountain. And so we hiked from 12,000, that was the camp, 12,500. We hiked to 16,000, and all of us, the five of us, I got to that point and said, I think this is enough for that day.
Yeah.
Well, we had hiked relatively fast up, and it was just that was straight up that day.
Ooh.
And then we had hiked back down to camp. Some of the other people in the camp went to a lake, a glacial lake, which is beautiful green because we hiked above it and we could see the lake. And
how long do the Sherpas usually stay in this lifestyle?
You know, this is seasonal for them because in another month, the snow's come. Like now,
right,
the
there's
passes
no
are closed. You know, you can't, it's way too dangerous up. you know, the winter storms come and stuff.
So is it a lifetime occupation in the seasonal sense?
Yeah, I think so, for most of them, or mm-hmm. some of them. One of there are Sherpas and there are porters. Porters carry a lot of the heavy tents and camping stuff. And one day I traded with a porter and we hiked together. And well, I traded only part of the day up a couple of mountains with four, and we talked because we'd stop and then we'd rest. And
yeah.
And he said he was in school. So they do, and one of our Sherpas it paints houses, I think.
All right.
And they do a variety of things, and a few of them do it for a living. And again, I think it's mostly in the spring and fall that
gives you a better, a simpler vision of that life, because most people imagining it think that they do this thing all year long.
Well, there might be in other places.
That's true.
But I don't know about. Right. But these particular Sherpas that we were with, they did a variety of things. And they knew the area, and they were in good shape, I mean.
No doubt.
They'd have to be.
Yes. You know, it's almost like partly cultural. I mean, these people just, you look at them, they skinny little legs, some of them, and they're only, you know, 100. They're about my size. Some of them are smaller, mm-hmm. carrying all kinds of stuff.
Most of their lives walking.
Yeah, yeah. And although some of them don't live in the higher elevations, they didn't seem to have a problem. Maybe they've been up there enough that it's very natural.
How many days
them.
were you doing
this? This is 3 weeks of camping.
3 weeks of
three
camping.
Weeks in a tent.
Wow.
And, you know, showers were scarce. Uh-huh. And once you got in the higher elevation, it was so cold that even when looking at that river, which was glacier water, didn't appeal to me.
And how comfortable was the bedroll? Undoubtedly, you had a little bedroll that you slept on.
We were comfortable at night. We had an air mattress that that was my job to blow up. I'm the trumpet player in the family. Leland would do certain things.
The one with the breath.
And I would blow up the air mattresses, and our sleeping bags were quite warm. We zipped them together, and we mm-hmm. were very cozy.
Cool.
That really, and after hiking 10 hours in a day or 7 hours, it felt good to lie down.
I would think so.
After dinner, the sun would go down. It would get cool. You pretty much laid in bed. You know, mm-hmm. If my flashlight was stronger, I would have read more. Mm-hmm. But I would do a few twists and turns what I could in these little tents, and mm-hmm. it felt good to sleep and just lay there and hang out, talk. A lot of times we'd go to bed, we'd be listening to the Sherpas singing and dancing. I don't know where they get the energy, but we go to bed.
Yes,
they'd still be singing and joking and stuff.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, they're used to it. As you said, it's partly their culture and what they grow up with.
And, you know, they enjoy it, too. Uh-huh. What really struck me is that our particular Sherpas were so good-natured and kind and caring, and it was so natural. Let me tell you a story. Okay, we're going up.
That's why you're here.
Here's an example of the way they are. I mean, they're not doing it because they're getting paid for it. They really just want to do it. When we were hiking that last day, not the last day of the hike, but up to the pass, the high point, everyone was slowing down. I looked at my wife. She has these hiking poles, which I didn't use poles, and she looks like she's moving in slow motion. And most of the days I hiked ahead of her, and I didn't bother. Everyone else take care of her. But that day we were in the snow, we were really high, and I said, "No, I'm staying with you today." You know, I look back, and she's going slower. I said, "Let me take you back." You know, so I put it along with my pack, and I started hiking. And as soon as I did that, Deepesh, who was one of the Sherpas, said, "Oh, let me get that, Alex." He comes up from behind. I look at him. He's got three packs on. And each one is like my size or bigger.
Wow.
And I said, "No, man, I'm not giving you this pack." He said, "Yeah, yeah." And I said, no way. And I just started walking. Well, Deepesh turns around and he looks for another Sherpa or one of the kitchen people who had a pack, but it wasn't as big. And he got Payman was his name, and he got Payman to stop me and take the pack. I mean, that's how he
That's incredible, yeah.
And he was they were that way, especially for the women or the people, anyone having a harder time. They were patient. They were just there for you and always concerned that you were warm enough, comfortable enough, needed anything.
In some of the best documentaries I've watched on mountain climbing, on some of these types of explorations, not unlike what you were doing, the highest praises are always given the Sherpas or those carrying the loads, and it never ends in ways of them really humbling themselves to the people that helped them.
And not just the helping, but you know, we connected with them. We shared with them. They got us. That Deepesh actually got me dancing one night when everyone started dancing. I didn't want to dance. He was come on.
That doesn't take a lot of effort.
I mean,
You played music up there.
Yeah, I did. I played my little pocket trumpet and went up the mountains, and it played for the kids, and it played in the parks.
How
and
did
stuff.
They like that?
They were intrigued.
Yeah, I bet.
Particularly like in the Tibetan border when we were close to Tibet. I mean, I don't think they had seen anything like it.
Please tell our audience the story. I love the story about the puppet.
Carlitos. Carlitos originally came from Guatemala. I bought him here in One World Market, a store here in Durham. But he comes from Guatemala, and I use this puppet to tell stories with, and to when I do music and stories in the libraries, particularly. And so Calitos had not only he speaks Spanish, now he had to learn Nepalese. And I had him, as we'd go through the villages, I had him in the side of my pack, and we'd go through the villages. You know, the trail would go through many little villages along the way, and Carlitos would come out, and I pinned his hands together, because the traditional greeting is with your hands together like a slight bow, namaste. Mm-hmm. And I pinned his hands together with a little safety pin, so he popped out of a cone, and he would greet everyone, namaste, namaste. And the little children, most of them, had never seen a puppet like that. And I would try to engage them in conversation. I'd say, Timbro Nam Keho is how you say, what is your name? Mm-hmm. And then they would tell me their name, and I'd say, I'm Carlitos, and you know. Well, eventually, on the way back down, when the trail met a bigger trail, and we went from the Manasalu trail to the Annapurna circuit, and we hit another village, and these two little girls and her grandfather were in front of a store, and I pulled out Carlitos and said, namaste, and the little girl, one of them, looked at Carlitos just like, wow, and she smiled, and I looked at her, and I said, this is Carlitos. Do you want Carlitos? Or I don't know if I said it or I thought it, but she held out her hands, and I just put Carlitos in her hands, and gave Carlitos to her, and she immediately just took him in, and now Carlitos lives in Nepal.
That was soulfully generous. That's a beautiful story.
That picture is on. So we have a calendar. We took pictures.
It's in the calendar,
and,
yes,
and documented our trip, including some of our getting in shape here in North Carolina and New Mexico. And it's all there with commentary and pictures, including the little girl and her grandfather.
Yeah,
it's a very beautiful calendar. You folks should look that up.
Mm-hmm. Along with the CD, that's available too if anyone wants to contact me for $15.
And that's your contact again.
Yes, give us that.
My cell number is 919-491-5089. Or you can go to the website and look up my email and email me. That's differentdrum.us is the website.
Brave man giving out that phone number.
I have never had a problem.
That's good. No, that's good. So I know there's one more selection of music. Why don't we go into that, and then we can sort of
continue
the conversation as we go out.
Okay, this is a song that the Sherpas used to sing, and they actually taught me how to play it on drum, and they taught the lyrics to several of us. Of me, who didn't learn it the quickest, my wife picked it up better. But number seven, we knew it as Le Calijo.
Okay, here we go. Thank you.
Yeah, I could sink into that. So let's close out by whatever else you want to catch us up on about that trip, or a memorable situation on the way down the hill, or it must have been heartbreaking to leave.
It's what it's like after we left. We continued to dream of we'd be in our own bed, and we think we'd wake up thinking we're in a tent. We continue to dream of the Sherpas. Both my wife and I continue to dream.
I can imagine that being an intense experience. Yeah,
it's like they stayed with us. And you know what? Maybe I'll close with. You have that calendar around, Audrey?
Yes.
This is a commentary I wrote while training for. It's the beginning of.
That would be an appropriate one to bow out with.
Trying to encompass the Himalayas and the realities that are so diverse. Before the trek, I trained in New Mexico for 3 weeks. Leland joined me the second half. I would alternate between hiking trails up the mountains outside of Santa Fe one day and running along the bicycle path alongside the arroyo that went through the town the next. This is in Santa Fe, about 7,000 feet. One evening, I was invited to hear a mariachi band at an art gallery downtown. I was a little anxious because I didn't know my way around Santa Fe that well at night. My anxiety increased as I saw police cars just waiting for drivers to make a mistake, or maybe they were on the lookout for drunk drivers on a Friday night. Parking is difficult downtown, so I figured I'd park on the outskirts and walk. Walking is a good thing to do. But would my car be safe with the camping stuff inside? All in all, I realized that I had a lot of anxiety about just about a simple Saturday night out. I started thinking about the Himalayan trek and realized I had no worries about that. I recall lots of people being worried about us hiking in the Himalayas, including my mother. Maybe I was just born in the wrong era, not meant for modern times, when a night on the town seems overwhelming, but a Himalayan trek a simple process. Or was I just being naive? Now, having done the trek, I can say with authority, a night on the town is more dangerous, and it doesn't have the health benefits. But the mariachi band was good.
Very nice.
Well, that's wonderful. Great note to go out on. Alex, thank you once again for joining us
Thank you, Claudio. It's an honor, and good luck to the radio station, and may people donate to your show and this station to keep it going, because I think it's a valuable thing.
Thank you, sir.
Where else are you going to hear first-person accounts of this kind of a trek up the Himalayas?
And with Alex Weiss, it's always to be continued, so he'll be on again, and we'll go
do
on.
Do it with music. Yes. So go to WCOMFM.org and donate whatever you can. If you can make it for a $10 a month donation, you could become a member of WCOM. If you want to put a dollar or $5 or $10 in an envelope and send it to 208
Anything's
East
appreciated.
Main Street, we will be so thankful. We need you to stay on the air, because nobody here is making a dime. We're just doing this for the love of good radio.
Keep us tuned in, and we'll keep you turned on.
Okay.
Thanks for joining us. Cheers.